All right, so we are at the back side of the book of Numbers and getting into Deuteronomy today. Andrew Curray, by the way, is going to come today. Okay, so Andrew, who cooked for us with one of the crew, he's one of last year's residency grads. He is taking Hebrew classes at FPU. So he's going to teach us the Shema, the Shema. Yeah. That's what I call it in Texas, the Shema. The Shema, Deuteronomy 6. So my hope is by 7 o'clock to have covered that. There is our goal, so that you guys know what the Shema is before Andrew comes in and teaches it to us in Hebrew. So you guys are going to memorize it in Hebrew so that we can say it when we go to Israel, okay? So thankfully, Jeremy's got a leg up on all of us with your Joshua background. Didn't you? Yeah, you, yes. You already have it memorized, right? And you know it by heart?
The Shema?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what they do with the horn?
Mm-hmm. The pinky?
They
do that. Well, you're going to get learned this morning. We will tell you all about it, but yes. All right, we'll get there. All right. So let's start in Numbers. And let's get there. All right, on that note, somebody please pray for us, and then we will we'll dive into backside of Numbers.
Thank you again just for another morning to continue to study your word deeper and deeper each day, Lord, and to follow the story of your people through all the work that you did through them, through the work that you did through Moses, and some of the hard lessons you had to teach them, Lord. Lord, I pray for all of us here that as residency continues and it starts to get to that grinding point, Lord, that we would just persevere and be able to stick it out until Israel, Lord, because I know Israel is going to be a great and life-changing trip. Mm. We pray these things in your son's Jesus' name.
Amen. All right. So, where were we? 30-ish?
33.
Fabulous. That sounds familiar. What's that? That's good. It's surprising that you wrote that far. All right. So, we've got a bit of the review. We've settled. I think we left on Reuben, Gad, the half-tribe of Manasseh in 32. We talked about that. Those two and a half tribes are settling outside the land on the east side of the Jordan, right? They committed to come fight. Moses had like a wee bit of a freak-out moment and said, hey, if you don't come, we're going to put your hands on the chalkboard and spank you. And they said, hey, no, we're coming. We're going to fight as we go to clear the land. So they cleared that up. 33, as you guys remember, is the review of the entire journey, okay? So the 40 years that they're wandering in the wilderness, and if you guys were at church, did you guys hear Brad mention how long that journey should have taken? From Horeb to Kadesh Barnea, which was the south end of the land? A couple days. It says in here 11, so, but I mean, think about that. 11 days, and that's with a lot of people walking really slow with kids and, you know, bathroom breaks and, you know, honey, are we there yet? And that type of thing, okay? So 11 days, and they're doing laps in Mount Sinai for 40 years, okay? So not a long journey. 3350 and following, I just want you to notice, you're going to hear this repeated time and time and time again as the Israelites prepare to go into the land. This is God's kind of initial first shot across the bow, okay? 3350, he says to them, this is, the new generation. They are sitting outside of the land. It says here in Moab, opposite the Jordan, okay? So they are right across from Jericho. Just in your... Moses initially looked at it that way. Like, he heard, you're wanting to do what the spies did, which was cower down and be afraid to go in the land. It looks like Moses said, I got it. This is more of a, you've got a ton of stuff and it's not all going to fit us. So I think at the end of the day, it's not. Though, the borders of the promised land that we're going to get to in Deuteronomy do not include, like, God's original deal was everything, it was west of the Jordan. So the promised land proper is inside of the Jordan River, okay? And that's modern day Jordan, the country of Jordan, where, and Syria up north where they're stationed. So it looks like no, but it was okay. So there you go. All right. So when they get in, 51 and 52, somebody read that in chapter 33. This is God's command to them.
Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, when you pass over the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall drive out all inhabitants of the land from before you and destroy all of their figured stones and destroy all their mental
Mental, man, it's mental. What do you notice repeated in that 52 four times? All. So when you go into land, you remove everybody. You remove all of their false worship, all of their idols, everything, okay? You're going to see in Deuteronomy this idea of there is no such thing as partial obedience. 80% obedience and 20% obedience does not get you an 80 on the test. It gets you a zero, okay? There is no such thing as, well, God, I'm going to do some of what you asked me to do and some of it I'm not. And that's, as you guys know the rest of the story, that's what Israel does. They come in and they do an okay job. They fight a bunch of battles in Joshua. They clear out a lot of the people, but not all of the people. And the reason we have the book of Judges and Kings and Samuel and all the malarkey that happens in the land afterwards is because these guys got a B- on the test instead of doing what God told them to do, which was all of it, okay? They're going to have an issue with this, okay? And again, God does not give them, this isn't welfare. This isn't, hey, I'm going to come in and I'm going to miraculously like shoot fires, whatever, from heaven and wipe everyone out and give you the land. There is no giving here. This is, I've already done it, but you have to do the work, okay? I'm not going to just let you go in and coast. You've got to go in and be obedient and defeat all the people, okay? Now, I've already won the battles for you, and I'm telling you, you're going to win everything, okay? But it's an interesting, like, that's God's economy, right? I'm not going to give it to you. You got to work for it, right? So that's how he commands them to go into the land, okay? So just in the back of your mind, remember that. Everything, all the people, there are no squatters. You're not going to leave people. You don't get to make slaves out of them, okay? You don't get to make, dangly earrings out of their molten images. Yeah, read that, Jeremy.
Okay. But if you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then those of them whom you let remain shall be as barbs in your eyes and thorns in your side.
That's a pretty good audiovisual, right? Right? You ever had a thorn in your side or something in your shoe? You're like, ooh, I mean, that'll... something that small will ruin you. And he's saying, that's the deal. That's why I want them out. It's not because I hate them. It's not because they are... And we're going to see even more specifically why he's so concerned about that. But this is God's initial shot across their bow. Get everything out, all right? 34 is the allotment of the land, okay? Brad mentioned something I thought was interesting on... see, there it is again. Interesting. fascinating. He clarified himself, but I had one of those persistent moments in church where I was like, what? He said there were two tribes that didn't get land in the land. You guys remember what those were? Simeon and Levi. Well, Levi didn't. They didn't get any land. Simeon got land, okay? They just got land inside of Judah, okay? And there's a whole chapter in Joshua about them getting land. So I was like, what? Like, what book are you reading? So he clarified it later to say they didn't get, like, great land. They got shoved in the middle of little brother Judah, who got a wallop of land, and they got this little dinky spot that's not that great of a piece of land, and they're landlocked by big brother or little brother, okay? So this is the allotment, and they are, as Brad mentioned, not mentioned in some places, but in Joshua, there is a whole allotment of land that's given to them. They're told, this is where you go, okay? So they got their land was more of a rebuke to them for goofing up way back in Genesis, as opposed to some of the others that got a blessing as a result, okay? So they get land. And I mention that because chapter 35 is all about the Levites who don't get land, but they get something else, okay? So 34, kind of land boundaries. 35, this is how God is going to handle the Levites. See if this isn't brilliant, okay? Verse 6, somebody pick up 35:6. I want you to listen just to how God gives them their land.
The cities that you give to the Levites shall be the six cities of refuge where you shall permit the manslayer to flee, and in addition to them you shall give 42 cities.
Okay, so how many cities do they get, 40, according to verse 6? You get the six at the initial, they're called cities of refuge, okay, and then you get 42 additional cities, okay? 42 plus 6, 48, okay, do the math, all right? So 48 cities, all right? Verse 7, keep going, Stephen.
All the cities
cities that you give to the Levites shall be 48 with their pasture land.
Okay, so they get pasture lands to keep their the sheep and stuff that have been given to them as a result of people tithing and what have you, okay? So 48 cities, and the idea is they're literally like, they're like salt, and they get sprinkled all over the land, okay? North to south, east to west, you have 48 cities all over, and that's where the Levites live, okay? Why would God do it that way? And we talked a little bit about that concept, but why the Levites and why no land? Yeah, so where do you want the mediators? Everywhere, right? It's like the church. We don't want people sitting in a bubble, you know, withdrawn from society. We want the church, like salt, sprinkled throughout the nation so that we can do what we're supposed to do, which is be, you know, a mediator between God and man. So that's what he does with this, the Levites, okay? But he does mention in verse 6, six cities that are included in the 48, okay, that are different, called cities of refuge, okay? And I gave you a preview of that. It says, these cities which you shall give the manslayer to flee to, okay? Look at verse 10 and 11, okay? This gives a little bit more, and 12 as well. Read that, and let's figure out what these cities are.
Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, when you cross the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall select cities to be cities of refuge for you, that the manslayer who kills any person without intent may flee there.
All right, so what are these cities for?
Criminals,
specifically what kind? Yeah, what kind of murder? Specific. Unintentional. We would call that today what? First degree or second degree? The second degree murder, it's manslaughter, okay? And I was driving in my car, somebody pulled out in front of me at a crosswalk, I never saw them, and I hit them, and I killed them. Oh, it's unfortunate. It's not, verse 15, the city shall be a refuge for the sons of Israel and the alien and the sojourner, that anyone who kills a person unintentionally may flee there. But, verse 16, if he struck him down with an iron object so that he died, he is a murderer. The murderer shall be surely put to death. Okay, so if this was premeditated, if you had an issue with somebody and you, you know, went guns blazing with them, this is not for you. This is for accidental. I screwed up. My ox ran over a dude when I was plowing, right? And my bad. So. Exactly. Okay. So this is house arrest. Okay. You can flee to that city, but verse 26, read that, okay? You can flee to that city and you're safe, okay? Verse 25, the congregation shall deliver the manslayer from the hand of the blood slayer, avenger. He can stay there, end of verse 25, until the death of the high priest, okay? So whatever high priest puts you there, who is currently Eleazar, if he puts you there and then he kicks the bucket, it's ollie oxen free. It's Red Rover, come on over. Everyone's out of the city, and it's game on, okay? 26, read that.
If the manslayer shall at any time go beyond the boundaries of his city of refuge to which he fled, and the avenger of blood finds him outside the boundaries of his city of refuge, and the avenger of blood kills the manslayer, he shall not be guilty of blood.
Okay, so what happens? If you're stuck to the city and you decide, you know what? I'm going to go make my annual trek to Jerusalem for Passover. And on your way there, you run into the brother of the dude that you killed. What does that brother have the right to do on the spot? And the blood is not on his hands, okay? In Israel's system, okay, that's blood vengeance, okay? Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. You kill my brother, I have the right to kill you. Problem solved, okay? Okay. Like it or not, that is God's system. So it cuts down on murder, right? Now, again, accident, you still wanted to, but God said, no, they can stay here, but their punishment is house arrest. They cannot leave until the death of the high priest, and that get out of jail free card now goes away. Okay, so that's the idea. So that's God's system. You'll notice those cities, there's three on the east side of the Jordan, three on the west side of the Jordan. They are Kadesh, different Kadesh than we studied, way up north, okay, far, far north, north of the Sea of Galilee, Shechem, or Shechem, as we all often call it, and then Hebron down south. Those are the three within the city, or within the borders of the land, okay, so south, central, and north, and then the same on the other side, okay? Does anyone see those listed in the text as to where those are? I don't... I'm reading off my map and not in the text. So anyway, those are the cities. If anyone happens to see where those specific six cities are mentioned, and it may be later that they picked them, okay? Obviously, we're very familiar with Shechem, right? That's where the massacre in Genesis 34 took place, where they slew the sons of Shechem, right? So that's that city. Kadesh, we haven't talked about at all, way up north. And then Hebron. Hebron is going to be David's original capital of Israel, okay? And will later get moved to Jerusalem, okay? Because it's a better defensible spot. So David's the one that will move the capital from there. So Saul's going to start in Hebron. That's going to be like the... That's the initial capital of Israel. It's going to be an important city, okay? So that's the idea. So that's cities of refuge. Those are the Levitical cities, okay? So every tribe but Israel gets land, Simeon included, okay? They just got a different kind of land, all right? Now, 36, okay? You guys remember the daughters of Zelophehad? Now we have a second issue with the daughter of Zelophehad. What was the original issue with those three daughters? It's stereo. I like it. Sonny, what? Yeah, so father died, father had no sons or brothers, so you got three daughters now with claiming, saying, hey, we want land rights. Our dad died in his sin, he wasn't with Korah, but he died, and he was deserving of death. What do we do with the land? And Moses said, you know what, I need to go to God. God said, that's right. Brothers first, if brothers aren't available, then daughters, and then after that it goes to uncles and whatever after that, okay? So they got rights given to them. 36, they have a new issue, okay? What if these women who are from, oh, I can't even remember the tribe that they're from, Manasseh, what happens if they marry a dude from Simeon? Now what happens to the land? Well, they've shifted their allegiance, right? So now that land could become now the husband's. So, verse 3, but if they marry, chapter 36, verse 3, if they marry one of the sons of other tribes, the sons of Israel, their inheritance will be withdrawn from the inheritance of our fathers and be added to the inheritance of the tribe to which they belong. Okay, it's just like, you know, those of you that are women or married, you changed your last name when you got married, you became, you identified yourself with the husband that you married, okay? So I may be a little bit old school, but I cannot stand when women will not carry the last name of their husband, because it speaks of a right and a rebellion to an identity and an unwillingness to come underneath the authority that God has set up. Not that I have to demand my wife's whatever, but it's a lack of submission to God's system, okay? And there's great reasons, I'm sure, that do it, and not everyone means that, but it's one of those pet peeves for me, okay? These women understood that. I am called to submit to the system, right? To my husband and to the authority and to follow him, right? And allow him to lead me, okay? So he would then, that family would take the land. So they're like, well, now what do we do? So God has a solution, okay? Verse 6, this is the solution to that problem. Not a cousin. Sonny, read 6.
This is what the Lord commands concerning the daughters of the...
Yep.
Let them marry whom they think best. Only they shall marry within the clan of the tribe of their
father. All right, so these gals, again, are from, where do we say, Manasseh? Okay, so they can marry within Manasseh, okay? So pick whoever you want, but your dating pool just decreased, you know, like tenfold, right? So that's how you have to stay. So that way it all stayed within the family, okay, in a right way, not Arkansas way, okay? So that's the idea. Ooh, exactly, okay? So that's the final chapter of Numbers, okay? The final issue with the daughters of Zelophehad, okay? So God, again, you see two instances where he is gracious to these women, figures out how to make sure that they have rights and that are taken care of in the midst of this system, okay? So, you with me?
They married their
husbands in 11.
Where?
In 11?
Yeah. Married their husbands on the
father. Uncle's sons. There you go. Yeah, I would assume that's maybe... on down the road, cousins, maybe not first. You guys can investigate that.
They're
kissing cousins, those kind. Right?
Arkansas looked at that and was like, we need to do that.
Oh, gosh.
They weren't living that long during the summer.
Yeah. So.
They were reaching 100 years old.
Yeah. You guys don't read what I tell you not to read. It just makes it more confusing. I get to explain stuff. Yeah.
Mike didn't know that.
And it's disobedience. No. No. Yeah. Clearly, that is the line. Oh, boy. God help us all. So I assume that does mean a little further down the chain of, but, you know, yeah, ask God when he gets to heaven. I don't know those, so. All right. It's Numbers. Come on. We finished four books of your Bible. Last book of the Torah, Deuteronomy. Okay. You guys got a great overview again on Sunday or Wednesday, whenever you went to church, of big picture of Deuteronomy. Okay, so let's move into that. Let's talk through this big picture deal. Okay, theme of Deuteronomy is what? What would you call it? What is Deuteronomy? What does it mean?
Second law.
Second law. Okay, so it is a review. Okay, duot nomos, second law. This is a review. Okay, this is Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers restated now, basically for the new generation. Hey, y'all were six. You didn't hear any of this stuff. Kids died. We gave the covenant to your fathers. You need now to hear this stuff, and it needs to be yours. Okay, so God is going to make this generation own it. This isn't just a, oh, by the way, it's a no. I need to instruct you guys and kind of teach you all that's happened. Okay, so big picture, okay, 1 through 3, chapters 1 through 3, are all about Israel's past, okay? We're going to review the journey again from leaving Egypt all the way to where they're sitting now, right outside of the Promised Land on the east side of the Jordan. They just defeated Sihon and Og, and they're getting ready to go right into Jericho, okay? God is going to review Israel's past. Here's what's happened over the last 40 years, okay? Chapters 4 through 11 are Israel's present, okay? Here's what's going on. Here's what's currently happening. We're going to see some great laws reiterated, clarified, elaborated upon, things that we didn't necessarily get in Exodus or Numbers or Leviticus, but yet nuances of those that are going to get brought to life in a bigger picture, okay? 4 through 11, present. So 1 through 3, past. 4 through 11, present. 12 through 30 is basically the entire law re-given, okay? So that's the idea there. 12 through 30 is the law. And then 31 through 34, the end of the book, these are Moses' last words, okay? This is prophecy, okay? Some of it is his admonitions to the people as to what they should do when he dies. Some of it is going to be a painting, a picture of what's going to happen after he leaves, okay? We've seen with every great patriarchal death, God gives them a chance to speak into the future. And you can imagine with Moses and his relationship with God, that'll be pretty significant, okay? So 1 through 3 past, 4 through 11 present, 12 through 30 is the law, again, and then 31 through 34 is prophecy slash Moses' last words, okay? So that's the whole book. So as you can imagine, we're going to get through it pretty quick. We're not going to cover all of it again because you've already covered it, okay? So you have not died during residency, so no need to recover all this to the next group, okay? So you have not died yet. Maybe you will. I don't know. Yeah, it's fascinating with that in mind when we get to chapter 6 in what God just rails on this new generation with that in mind, okay? So keep that question in mind, okay? Why God would be so concerned about having to reteach this? And again, not to bang on Brad. Brad made the observation that, man, if you were in the wilderness and God said, you're done, you're not going in, your kids are going in, what would be your tendency? Gosh, I should pour into my kids. I should teach them those things. This generation was marked by disobedience. I don't know that they did this. So when they get into the land, right before they step foot in the land, God says, time out. Let me recover everything with you. And Moses has to do all of that. So I get the impression that there wasn't a whole lot of that going on. I think there was probably some, and there were obviously godly people that were in that midst that just made some poor decisions, right? Like Moses, who doesn't get to go into the land. He's godly, right? But hopefully there were others like that. So I don't know what they did, but God has to take the time to review all of this with them and make sure this isn't head knowledge. You know, your fathers had head knowledge. We need heart knowledge. It needs to sink in. You need to live this out, okay? So, and we're going to see him just really pour into that, okay? So chapter 1, verse 2, there you get it. 11 days journey from Mount Horeb. Where is Mount Horeb? What is that also called? Mount Sinai, okay? By the way of Mount Seir to Kadesh Barnea. Okay, that is where the spies went to go into the land, okay, to spy out the land. So 11 days. That's all this journey took, okay? Week and a half, leaving Egypt to there, that's how long it should have taken them. That's with, again, women, kids, all the stuff that they had, they should have made that in 11 days, okay? So there is that piece, okay? Interesting here in verse 6, he's going to call them where they're to go. Look at verse 7. I want you to show, just want you to see some of the lands that you've already learned, okay? But God's now going to speak to some geography. Making up new words as we go. Okay, read 7 and 8.
Turn and take your journey and go to the hill country of the Amorites and to all their neighbors in the
Arabah. Okay, where is the Arabah? You guys remember? That's south of the Dead Sea. That is that strip of land that is the Yeshimon, okay, the nothingness, the wasteland, the filthy, McNasty part of Israel that is just don't go there, okay? That's the Arabah, okay? That is where average temperature in the summer is like 120 degrees. Average, awful, okay? Whole bunch of nothing, okay? That's the Arabah, okay? We are, yep. You're going to feel every bit of 120. We put a thermometer on the rock last year when we were in, and we weren't down there when we did it. We were next to the Dead Sea at Qumran. And somebody put a thermometer on a rock, and it maxed out at 120. The thermometer did, and it was awful. Awful. But it was worth, the journey is worth it, but it's, yeah. Shannon Beery, when she was in here, mentioned hydrating beforehand. Your body has to learn how to hydrate, so if you normally don't drink a lot of water during the day, you need to start a couple weeks before you go to Israel, just getting your body and your bladder used to consuming that much water, because you can't, it can't catch up if you don't, okay? So just, it's tough. So that day will be fun, but hard. Yeah, yeah. So, all right. So there's the Arabah, keep going.
In the hill country and the lowland and in the Negev.
The lowland. Anybody got a note on what the lowland is? Who's got a Ryrie? Anybody? Ryrie study Bible? None of you? The lowland is the Shephelah, okay, that we studied, right? Coastal plains, then the Shephelah, okay, Judah Mountains, and then the wilderness. That's the Shephelah, okay? So they're going into these deals. The Negev, okay, where's the Negev? Down south, southern border, Beersheba and south. That's where Abraham would lived, and that was where he sojourned, okay? So, again, this is where you're going to go, okay? Verse 8, I have placed the land before you. Go in and possess the land. The Lord swore to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph. Remember these guys, all right? So they're getting called to go in, all right? Again, review the journey, okay? 13, get wise and experienced men. Get a team. 19 and following, hey, go spy out the land. Here's what happened. Y'all screwed up. Caleb and Joshua get to go in. That's chapter 1, okay? That's a review of all of that, all right? Chapter 2 is now a review of their journey. You'll notice in there in verse 4, you hear about Esau. Hey, what happened with Esau? When they were coming through the land, they said to Edom, hey, can we come through your land? And Edom said, uh-uh. Could they fight Edom? No. God said, no, you may not go to war with them. Okay, you get to go the other way. All right. Now, he mentioned something about two groups of people, Edom, okay, and Moab and Ammon. Okay, so in verse 9, he mentions these guys. I just want you to notice this. This is kind of a, it's a preview for what's coming for Israel. Okay, read verse 9 of chapter 2.
And the Lord said to me, do not harass Moab or contend with them in battle, for I will not give you any of their land for possession, because I have given Ar to the people of Lot for possession.
Okay, you guys remember Moab? They came from the incestuous relationship between Lot and his daughters. That was the offspring. But God promised them land, okay? Now, he promised them land outside of the promised land, but they got land. How did they get the land, okay? 10 and 11, keep reading.
The
Emim? Sure. Anakim, who are they? You guys remember them? Giants, keep going. All right, so these big giants in the land that God had given to Moab. Keep going.
The Horites also lived in Seraphim, but the people of Esau dispossessed them and destroyed them from before them and settled in their place.
Okay, so how did Esau take his land? They went to war. Now, did God give them the land? Yep. Yes, but did they have to fight big, strong, tough guys when they went in there? Okay, Amnon, verse 19, same thing. This is their land. God gave it to them. They had to go fight big, strong, tough guys, right, to get the land. Now, what is Israel about to go do? Fight a bunch of big, strong, tough guys to get their land. So God's saying, listen, I've done this with nations that I haven't even chosen. But because I gave my word, and because they are underneath my promises, I gave them the land. Now, I didn't give it to them. They had to go work for it. Now, knowing what's coming for Israel, that's a bit of a rebuke, right? These pagan nations who worship false idols and don't even worship me, I blessed them, and they got the job done, okay? They were completely obedient, and they drove these peoples out from their lands, okay? Israel, on the other hand, is about to blow it and not get that done. So this is a bit of a backhanded slap to Israel coming, all right? So these guys got their land just as God said, but they had to work for it. So remember that. God is not a God of handouts per se, right? Even with the welfare system in Israel, right? They're the corners of the fields, okay? We'll leave them for you, but you go work for it. You've got to pick it. You've got to go get sunburn. You've got to work to get your food, okay? So that's the idea. That's chapter 2. 24 and following is the Transjordan conquest again, okay? We read 3 and a bit of we read this earlier about Og and Sihon and those kings and how big those guys were. You remember the 311, the guy's coffin or his bed. We're not sure what the exact translation is, but this guy's, the place where he laid down was 13 and a half feet long, okay? So he had a big coffin or bed to lay in because he needed it, right? So 1 through 3, that's the past, all right? Now 4, this is the key to kind of Israel's present, okay? Now I want you to notice this, all right? This is, God is going to give them basically, if you want to come into the land and you want to win, here's what you need to do. This is battle plans, okay? Odd battle plans, but battle plans nonetheless, okay? 4 verse 1, read that.
And now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and the rules that I am teaching you, and do them, that you may live. And go and take possession of the land of the Lord, the God of your fathers, is giving you. You shall not add to the word that I command you, nor take from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God that I command you.
Okay, so God just gave him battle plans. What did he say? Here's how you take the land. How would you summarize 4, 1, and 2? Israel, this is what you need to do.
Don't do anything else, just do it.
Okay. What specifically is he telling them to do? Verse 2. Do not add to the word which I am commanding you, nor take away from it. You may keep the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you.
Obey.
Just obey. Obey what? Battle plans? No. Obey me, which means what? Love God. Love your neighbor. Obey these laws. Don't wear cotton and poly. Okay. You know, it doesn't fly. Be obedient to the law. That's what he's saying to them. Is that not odd? This isn't, hey, go sharpen your swords, and we're going to see this all the way throughout. That is the continual battle cry of God. Just obey me. And if you do what I've asked you to do, you're going to get into the land, and you'll take care of business, okay? So 1 through 4 is all about obedience, okay? Those 4 verses, all right? 7, I look at 5 there. See, I've taught you statutes and judgments just as the Lord commanded me that you should do thus in the land when you're entering it. Verse 6, keep them and do them. Verse 7, for what great nation is there that has a God so near to it as the Lord our God whenever we call upon him? That's how we're going to the land. What nation has a God like our God? Answer, none. So obey him. All right, so that is God's cry. Okay, verse 10, this is going to begin a theme of words within the book of Deuteronomy. Okay, and mine's actually in italics, but it's, so it means it's, the word actually is not there, but it's interpreted. Read verse 10.
How on the day that you stood before the Lord your God at Horeb, the Lord said to me, gather the people.
All right, stop right there real quick. Yours just says on the day. Mine says remember the day, okay? This generation is being called to reflect and to remember what happened. What happened to the people when they disobeyed? What happened to the people when they, when Moses went up the hill to Mount Sinai and they had a party down the hill and started worshiping false gods? God has continued to call him, remember, remember, remember. We see that word repeated 15 times in Deuteronomy. Remember, don't forget. Remember how you were disobedient. Remember how this generation did, and don't forget that, okay? Remember the Lord your God. Don't forget the victories that he's given you, okay? That is kind of the cry from God for, it's the sub-theme of Deuteronomy, okay? It's review, but there's this theme of remember, don't forget, okay? In fact, when we went to Israel last year, we got that word inscribed on a ring for all of us in Hebrew, remember, okay? And that was kind of the theme of our trip, remember, don't forget, all right? So that's going to be the battle cry for God, okay? Again, lots of review stuff in here. and kind of this this idea. Verse 1, 2, and 3 of chapter 5. Flip there, okay? And I want you just to see one of the things that God is going to re-communicate to them and why this is important. Read, read 2 and 3 specifically, chapter 5.
Made a covenant with us in Horeb. Not with our fathers did the Lord make the covenant, but with us who are all here alive today.
Why is that important? How old were these guys at Mount Horeb when God made this covenant? Young, right? Under 20 at the very least, right? So in reality, he made this covenant with their fathers, not with them. But what is God saying here? I didn't make that with your parents. Who did I make that covenant with? You. Why is that important? This is yours to keep, okay? Yes, your parents disobeyed it. That doesn't mean it's null and void. I am making this with you. You and I, this generation, are entering into a covenant agreement together, okay? The law that I gave to them, I'm asking you to obey and to do, and I will bless you just like I promised, okay? So he's adding responsibility to them, okay? That's the idea, okay? So it's theirs to own at a heart level, okay? Six, we're going to skip real quick. We'll come back to it in a minute. All right. That's the Shema is wrapped up in chapter 6, and it's wonderful. So we'll get there. Okay. Chapter 7, I just want you to look over here, and I want you to see a couple, again, warning signs from God as to when they get into the land. Okay. Chapter 7, verse 1, he says, "When the Lord your God shall bring you into the land where you are entering to possess it, you shall clear away the nations that are before you, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites." It's like, oh my gosh, right? Seven nations greater and stronger than you. Hey, by the way, Israel, you're going to go into a land. It's 1v7, and every one of those nations alone is stronger than you, much less all of them together, okay? You are David. That is seven Goliaths. Why would God remind them of that? What's that? It's not your battle to win. Whose battle is it to win? God's. It's my battle. You cannot beat them. It is impossible. But I can. Okay? So just to, that's a scary reality to go up into, right? Like, there's a big difference between, yeah, I'll trust God, and holy cow. There's a lot of you. There's a lot less of us. These guys are trained warriors. We are not, right? So God reminds him of that right from the get-go. And then he reminds him in verse 2, "And when the Lord your God shall deliver you from, deliver them from you, and you shall defeat them," not if, but when, "then you shall utterly destroy them. You shall make no covenant with them and show no favor to them." What does that mean? No covenant. What would a covenant look like with a pagan nation? Yeah, a treaty, a peace treaty, right? Hey, we're not going to fight. You hang out over there in your little area. You know, we'll fence it off. And we'll live over here and we'll be good together, right? That happens currently in Israel. It's called the Gaza Strip. How's that working? Not so good, right? If you watch the news ever, you realize that place is hostile and a mess. And the reason that place exists today is because of this right here, okay? We can point back to this and go, Israel, if you would have done your job, that would not be happening today. It's amazing that you can tie a string here in, what are we in, like 1400 BC? And that problem is a direct result of what is happening now in 2080. Amazing, okay? So, there you go. Destroy everybody. Don't make a covenant. Furthermore, verse 3, what else should you not do? Not intermarry, okay? Is God racist? Does he not like the idea of some Jewish person marrying a Moabite or whatever? Moses did it, right? Miriam got ticked. So, was that the real reason? What's the reason? 4, read it. Pagan gods. So God is not opposed to intermarriage per se, as long as that person is completely devoted to God. Now, God knows when they get in the land, there's going to be a lot more options out there, right? And as Brad mentioned last week, and these were very seductive options to get into. So God says, no intermarrying, okay? If you intermarry, your hearts will be led astray, okay? And you can see that. I know, you know, just from growing up, I had friends that were a Catholic who married a Jew. What do you think happens to that kid? Man, neither, they're not a Jew, they're not Catholic, they're not committed to anything, right? And more often than not, they see conflict, and it's like, well, that's what happens. So God says, don't intermarry, okay? You're going to tear down Verse 5, their asherim, all their places of worship, tear them down. We're getting rid of everything. And that's just their call, okay? So they have to get rid of everything, okay? 6, 7, and 8 are probably some of the coolest behind-the-scenes, unveil-the-curtain of sovereign election that you can see, okay? This is really powerful to see why God loves his people this way. Read 6 and 7 and 8. Treasured possession. That's that word, Jeshurun, right? It'd be a pet name that a husband has for his wife, right? It's special. Like, neat language that God uses. You're a chosen people, loved by God for his own possession, special treasure, okay? Keep going, 7 and 8. So unpack that for me. What does that mean, 7 and 8? The Lord did not choose you because you were mighty in number. In fact, you were fewer than anybody else. But because he loved you and kept the oath which he swore to his forefathers and brought you out of Egypt with a mighty hand, redeemed you from the house of slavery. What's God saying about? So if you were to take a sovereign election is the word, and you root it down in something. What is that rooted in? What's the motivation for God? That's certainly a piece of it, okay? But for the people itself. Huh? Love. I love you. Sovereign election is not logical. Sovereign election is motive. I love you. What I'm doing does not make sense, but I love you, right? As you look at this, this is the greatest love story ever written, right? It's a sovereign, good God that refuses to back down on his word, regardless of how disobedient this people is, right? Now, what did we just get off of, right? We got off of 40 years of a nation that basically said, I don't want anything to do with you, God. See ya. And he says, I still love you, right? He's going to compare the nation in Hosea, to a harlot who literally goes out like a harlot, and that's how this nation treats her husband, and then the husband is called to go pursue that wife regardless. That's the imagery that's given, and that's God. So beautiful picture of how God interacts with his people, okay, because of, again, he loves them and loves us, okay? So I love that picture that he gives them, okay? In fact, he's going to tell them in just a minute, Jeremy, you hit on it. I think it's in chapter 8. The reason, by the way, that you guys are getting the land isn't because you guys are so great. It's because these people that are in the land are awful, and they make me want to vomit so because of their abhorrent practices. So I'm kicking them all out, and you guys get to go in, okay? So again, these are the rules. Don't intermarry. Remember why I love you, why you're doing that. Verse 13, if you do these things, by the way, man, he's going to bless the fruit of your womb, the fruit of the ground. You're going to get new grain and new wine and livestock. Again, what is the key to victory for these people? Obey. Just obey me, and I will bless you beyond anything you can imagine, right? You don't have to be great warriors. You don't have to be smart. You don't have to be tough. You don't have to be brilliant. You just need to love me and obey. And what does that assume, right? As we've talked about this before, does that mean they're perfect? No, it means they work within the system. Oh, God, I blew it today, but my mind's on you, and I screwed up here, and I confess, and I'm going to the tabernacle, and I'm giving Eleazar my sheep or my goat, and I'm giving you a sin offering because, man, I blew it, and I'm grieved over that. That's all he wants from his people, right? And then have the time between sin and repentance be quick, and then have the time between sin and sin get longer, right? Just keep walking with me, and that's all I want you to do, okay? So, again, just a beautiful picture of what God's doing, all right? So that's chapter 7, all right? And then you get some neat verses that just starting there with the promises that are coming, okay? Let's return back to chapter 6 real quick that are kind of tucked in the middle of this as we get into it, okay? And again, this is a great reminder for the people of Israel. And Jared, I think you brought up the question of was this the result? Is so much of this here because the old generation did not communicate the things necessary to the up and coming generations? I think the answer to that is yes, okay? So 6 verse 1, let's pick up there, okay? And let's work through this.
Now this is the commandment, the statutes and the rules that the Lord your God commanded me to teach you, that you may do them in the land to which you are going over to possess it, that you may fear the Lord your God, you and your son and your son's son, by keeping all his statutes and his commandments, which I command you all the days of your life.
So how many generations are you talking about in chapter 2, or verse 2? Who do you see mentioned? You, your son, and your grandson, right? So we're talking about multiple generations. You guys remember Paul's admonition to Timothy, 2 Timothy 2:2, the things that you've heard from me, entrust these things to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. Paul is saying to Timothy, look, dude, your heritage is not about just the next guy. You're going to measure success based on what happens to him and what happens to him. In fact, for me, it's not just me, Paul, it's Paul, Timothy, next generation, next generation. If we drop the ball 4 generations from now, Paul says, that's my fault, okay? God is saying that with them. Okay, you guys have to think bigger than you. You've got to teach your kids, and you have to teach your kids how to teach their kids so they can teach their kids. It's not just about living your life in this isolated deal. It's not just about the generation that's coming. You've got to instill in them these values. They have to live them, and then they have to understand, how do I teach those now to my kids when you're dead, right? And if you haven't given them the tools to do that, then we fail. Okay, that's God's admonition to them, multiple generations, okay? Verse 3, O Israel, you should listen and be careful to do it, that it may be well with you, just that the Lord may multiply you greatly, just as the Lord your God did with your fathers. He's promised you in the land flowing with milk and honey. Okay? Verse 4 now starts the Shema. Okay? The word Shema is the word hear. Listen, ears in Israel. Okay? Shema, O Israel, listen, Israel. The Lord our God, the Lord is one. The Lord is our God, the Lord is one. Okay, that is the central theme. And when you boil down who God is to the people, okay, he is our God and he is one. Okay, that word one is the same word that's used for man and wife. When they come together, they're one. They're united, okay? It's he is God, he is God alone, okay? That's the belief, okay? Which is why, by the way, Jews have such an issue with Trinity, okay? They're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. God is echad. He is not multiple. He is only. There is no other God. And our language sometimes confuses them because we say, no, we have 3 gods. You know, we have God the Father, and then we have God the Son, and we have God the Holy Spirit. And they say, no, that's called polytheism, and that's bad. And we say, no. There's one God, and he manifests himself differently, okay? There are 3 persons, but they're all God, okay? So we're clear on that, okay? There you go. All right. Hello. Come on in, Andrew. Good timing. We just started Deuteronomy 6, verse 4. Okay, so, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Okay, so that idea of unity. You shall, verse 5, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. These words that I'm commanding you today shall be on your heart. So where is God trying to implant this again on them? In their head? No, I don't want you to know it. I want you to do it. I want you to live it out. This has to be owned by you. Okay, so that's the idea. Verse 7, okay, we mentioned this in church on Sunday. You shall teach them diligently to your sons, okay? When? When you sit, when you walk, when you lie down, when you rise up. What does that mean? When are you to be teaching the next generation about the things of God? All the time, right? When you're walking, when you're making breakfast, right? When you stub your toe, when you're fixing the fence. Teach your kids all the time. This is a lifestyle, okay? That's a heart thing, okay? Verse 8, do them, bind them around the signs of your hand, and this should be as frontals on your forehead. Those are the phylacteries and the other things, okay? But that's the idea. So verse 4 and 5, that is the Shema, okay? That is the central cry of an Israelite. This would have been repeated multiple times during the day. When you rose, when you went to bed, this would have been their prayer, okay? This is the ABCs of Israel, okay? Everybody knows this, okay? No one in America does not know their ABCs, right? Nobody, regardless of how uneducated you may be, this is part and parcel to them, okay? So because of that, we as Americans need to understand the significance of that, okay? We need to understand what is core and central to a Jew, okay? So we're gonna memorize this now in Hebrew. Andrew's gonna walk us through it, okay? So you guys are gonna learn some Hebrew this morning. So Andrew, come on up and I will let you kind of walk through this. And you can teach us, O wise one. So, Andrew Cray, everybody. Come on.
What's up?
Good morning.
I'm awake. Took a shower.
All right, so like Mike just said, Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 5, and then kind of following 6 through 9 is known as the Shema. We add something a little bit different. If you see down the asterisk down at the bottom, love your neighbor as yourself. That was Jesus kind of talking about the first or the main commandment, love the Lord your God. And then he psyched all the Pharisees out by saying, and the second is like it. And they're like, what? And said, love your neighbor as yourself. And so that's when we go to Israel, or when you guys will go to Israel, you'll say both of those. And so we're going to learn it real quick. And it might take a little bit, but yeah. So I'm going to read through it in English, and then I'll go through it in Hebrew. And so just read along. Obviously, that isn't written in Hebrew, but it's written in Hebrewish, so you guys can actually understand what I'm saying. Yeah. So English, hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone, or the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might, and love your neighbor as yourself. Hebrew, Shema Israel, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad, Ve'ahavta et Adonai Elohecha, Bechol Levavcha, Uvechol Nafshecha, Uvechol Meodecha, Ve'ahavta Re'aka Kamoka. Cool. So
a little different, huh? Not quite English.
So basically, like Mike said, it goes on to say, you shall teach it diligently to your children. You'll do it when you sit down, when you rise up, when you walk. You'll see when we're at the Wailing Wall, mainly you'll see these things called phylacteries, and that it says in the text that you call them frontlets, and they just put them, they take it like as literally as possible. So if you look at these, it's not just some random box. Inside is a tiny little scroll, and written on it is the Shema. And they take it as literal as possible. As they put it here, they wrap it on their left hand, you'll see like a leather strap, and it goes all the way up, and it's as close to their heart as possible, and they're sitting at the wall trying to get as close as possible to God, which is awesome but sad because he's not there. Well, he's there, but he's everywhere. And so just the context of it, being able to know what it means, it's like, you'll do this and put it, you know, bind it on your hand and then wear it as frontlets between your eyes. They literally, it's weird. It's the weirdest thing. It's a black box and just goes bing right on their forehead. And they just sit there and they kind of move back and forth and you're like, something's wrong with them. But they're, I mean, it's the craziest thing. So when you guys are in Israel, Brad, Mike, whoever is leading that morning, they will have you guys stand up and say it every time. Sadly, the group that I went with was like, yeah. And we kind of like mumbled our way through it. And so when I talked to Mike, I was like, I want to come in and teach the Shema because like we kind of had it a little bit. We had our booklets, but I don't think really anybody took it as seriously as the teachers did, is that we try to take, we're not, you guys aren't going to have to wear boxes on your head or on your arms, but when you, in the mornings, you're going to stand up. What's this? What's the significance of this?
So in the Joshua Institute, they say it for every meal, the Shema, okay, in English and in almost in Spanish.
Right? Oh, that's next week.
So, yeah, it's next week we learn French and English. You really learn all of it. But the idea was there was a tradition saying when God brought Israel out of Egypt, he did it by the power and the tip of his pinky finger. So imagine what he could do if he used all his power. Mm. That's all it took for God to get Israel out of Egypt and do all these miracles. So they would say it with their pinky up. Okay, and when we're in Israel, we will do that as well. Okay, so when you say the Shema, we'll say it together with our pinkies up. And it's just a reminder to us of that's all God needed. And yet he's so much more than that, right?
Right. And it'll feel weird. I mean, honestly, you're going to stand up in a bunch of white people and everyone's going to be kind of looking at you. But at the same time, I think you guys have told a story of people like cheering you on, being like, okay, they're coming into our country like wanting to know as much as possible about our country, and they're actually respecting what we do. And so as weird as it'll feel, it's very respectful. It's very, I mean, it's traditional, and it goes way back, not even back, you know, a couple hundred years, so all the way back to Deuteronomy. So we're going to read through it. Ready? English. And we'll do it, you guys will do it in both. You'll start in English, and then you'll do it in Hebrew, not Spanish. Okay, ready? Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might, and love your neighbor as yourself. Shema Israel, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad, Ve'ahavta et Adonai Elohecha, Bechol Lavavka, Uvechol Nafshecha, Uvechol Meodecha, Ve'ahavta Reaka Kamoka. So there's a little you can hear it in there, in the, you know, the KH sound, in the CH sound. Honestly, it's going to take a little bit, but, and I'm not going to try to like give you guys homework or like have it done in like a week, where you could and you owe me a dollar or something like that. But, I should have done that. Dang. But I think, I think the biggest part of it is like, you want to get up when you guys are there and before, as much as you guys can know about the culture and about the language going there. I know it seems kind of redundant and seems kind of not lame, but you're not going to really have to talk a lot of Hebrew, but Ronan, your tour guide, is going to say a lot of things in Hebrew. And so the more you guys practice something like this, the more you guys are going to be open to just hearing things that he has to say. And then throughout the trip, being able to pick up on some of the things that he has to say when you guys get on the bus, when he says Boker Tov, which means good morning, or Laila Tov, which means good night. It's like little things like that where you, initially you're going to be like, I'm, okay, cool, good to know you, you know? And so there's, just learn it. It's going to be a lot easier. You guys are going to say it every day. I don't know if we said it at the end of the day. Sometimes we said it at the end of the day. But
when you go through it and say each line, they'll just repeat after you so that we can sure. hear it and yeah. repeat it that way.
Yeah.
And by the way, that's going to get posted online, okay, so you guys can go back and hear Andrew say it, and that's how I do it. I'll play it and read the words, listen to someone else say it, and then repeat it. So
yeah.
We'll make sure we've got a good clean version of you saying it. But yeah, take us through line by line and kind of let us repeat after you.
Okay, so in Hebrew, Shema Yisrael.
Shema Yisrael.
Adonai Eloheinu.
Adonai Eloheinu.
Adonai Echad. Ve'ahavta et Adonai Elohecha.
Ve'ahavta et Adonai Elohecha.
Bechol
levavka.
Uvechol nafshecha.
Uvechol nafshecha.
Uvechol meodecha.
Uvechol meodecha.
Ve'ahavta reaka kamoka. Kamoka.
Didn't it sound like a from
Star Wars? Yeah. Ryaka Kamoka, please. Hot. One of the things that you guys will also see, they take it literally all the way through, is like on doorposts, it says on your doorpost and on the in the frame of your city gates. You'll see, I think in some of the hotels, they have like little boxes too. And so it's everywhere. Take this. Don't throw it away. Go through it. Sound it out, you know. I mean, I wrote it in English for you guys so you could just like sound it out. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean,
perfect. And just so you guys are aware, the lines match up. I'm sorry, I'm not looking at your version, but I assume that you matched up.
Yeah, they match up.
So the last part, obviously, love your neighbor as yourself, they have the Raka Kamoka. That's Leviticus 19:18. Okay, so when Jesus summarized the law, when a Jew says the Shema, they don't say that part. Okay. It ends at with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. Okay, so we will add the last part, because Jesus included that as the central theme of kind of like love God, love them. Okay, so word in Matthew 22. So, okay? So keep working on that, okay? That needs to be ABCs for you by the time we get to Israel. Know it, learn it, be able to say it without looking, okay? I've struggled with this for you, so you guys know, like, I'm still like, Brad's a lot better than I am at it, okay? This is just for some of us who don't learn the English language real well, it's tough, okay? And it's just very different than some of the languages that we have.
I'm in my second semester of Hebrew, and so it's getting a little bit easier, but still I'm like, so.
And you get overseas and you realize, like, Ronan knows five languages fluently.
Yeah.
And most foreigners all know, right? The big joke is, what do you call someone that knows three languages? Trilingual. What do you call someone that knows two languages? Bilingual. What do you call someone that knows one language? American. they're stupid. So this does say a lot of things you said for us to be able to say, no, we at least know a little bit, right? And where the bathroom is. Okay. Cool. Questions for Andrew or things that we need clarity on, okay? Again, we'll post that online, so just, 70 minutes into the lesson and find, what Andrew's saying, and you guys can pull that out or whatever. Okay.
I think if you guys are interested, I mean, you could probably look at the Hebrew version and then look up at the English version and start picking out like what words are what. So Adonai, I'm sure you guys have heard the word Adonai before, right? Eloheinu, that comes from the word Elohim, so God. So Adonai Eloheinu, the Lord is our God. Adonai, again, Echad, that is the same root word for the number one, which is Echad in Hebrew. So the Lord alone or the Lord is one. And then Ve'ahavta, Ve'ahavta, love and love. So you guys can start picking it out. And that's a really easy way to remember or to learn it. Not just to memorize the words, but to be like, okay, I know what I'm actually saying. I know where I'm at in the Shema. So if I said, say, love your neighbor as yourself, you could say the end part because you actually remember the words. And so it's not just a way of just memorizing, okay, I'm gonna memorize exactly what it is, or a song. It's way more intense. It's actually knowing it and believing that, actually believing it instead of just memorizing and waking up and being, okay, we have to say it again, so that's my encouragement. Amen.
Guys, anything else that you want clarity on? Do you want Andrew to go through it again so there's a good clean recording of it, or good?
Good.
Okay.
Cool.
Dig it. You too, man. Thank you. Appreciate it. Andrew, thanks for coming, man. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Can you give him a golf clap? Or a real one, whatever. So, good stuff. So, yeah, since Andrew's like the only guy in the world that knows Hebrew, he's going to get sucked into doing this every year now. So, thanks, buddy. Have a great day. Love it. All right, so who knew you're going to learn Hebrew in residency program? So, cool. You guys feel good about that? Okay, awesome. So, put it on your iPod. Listen to it in your car, right? You'll be amazed at how fast you can pick it up. But that's good and healthy for us to do, all right? Cool? Love it. And we'll say it daily, as Andrew said, but even bigger than that, we're going to go to a place in Israel where we're going to stand on the top of a mountain together and we're going to scream it, okay? So it sounds really stupid when you go, Shema Israel! Yihad! Kamoka! Right? And that's what happens. You're looking at it like, and before we had Rich Ferreira, who, leads Israel, the Hume trip, and he knows, right? So we could kind of fake it and he was loud, but when it's just us, and it's you and me and Brad and Rick Taylor and our group, it's like, man, there's nobody to, right? You gotta know it or you look like a ding dong. So, all right? Cool? Yeah, but they're gonna look at you and go, they're not gonna learn the Shema. So the people that are coming to our training or whatever, that's the difference. Like, you'll walk and go, gosh, they got a little training, but they're not gonna appreciate it as much because we're basically creating the pegboard for you guys to fill stuff in. They're not gonna have the pegboard. They're not gonna know where stuff fits and how to assimilate it all. So that's what we're trying to do with you guys, is create the room so that your sponge is wrung out and ready to receive information and you know how to put it in certain places, or it's all just like turn on the fire hydrant and you're trying to drink what you can, but 99.9% of it is going away from you because you cannot retain it all, okay? So that is what we want the Israel experience to be for you guys, where you can soak it up. You're not going to learn it all then, but you can retain it.
and go back through and go, okay, got it. Read your journal and process. And years later, you'll read your Bible, you know, like we're having a devotion with our kids the other night. We're even in church and Brad mentions, you know, Lakish. And I'm like, Michelle, we stood there, right? You remember, oh yeah, Lakish. You know, now we close our eyes and see it. So that's the importance of it. I don't want to waste your $4,000, okay? So that is why we're doing everything we can to make sure you guys are good, all right? We will do our part, okay? So you guys just keep working on your end and it'll be life-changing, okay? Cool? All right, so that's 7. We got a couple more minutes. Let's keep going, okay? Let's see if we can finish. Just get through 11, okay? Let's go to 8, okay? 8 is a good reminder, okay? And I like this chapter because it's very, very applicable to us in life. God's going to remind them, hey, by the way, here's why I allowed you to go through 40 years of just difficulty, okay? So thank God, God's seasons of difficulty in our lives generally aren't that long. But he tells them, listen, I'm not just ramping up the pain for the sake of being a jerk. Like, I am teaching you something. And this is where it is, okay? And here's where we begin to see those words, okay? Chapter 8, verse 1. I am commanding you, all the commands I'm commanding you today, be careful to do them, that your lives may multiply. Verse 2, you shall remember. Okay, there's that word again. Remember, don't forget. The way which the Lord your God has led you in the wilderness for these 40 years, that he might humble you, test you to know what is in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. Okay, so as you look at trials through that lens, what do you see in there? Remember why God did this, that he might humble you. He's testing you to know what is in your heart. What are the purposes of trials according to God? Yeah, and what does humbling do? I mean, when you're broken and you're at the end of your rope, what's left? There's no more facade. There's no more faking it. There's no more, no, I really believe this. It's like, no, you don't. You believe at that point what you do, and every other thing is gone, right? You either cling to God or you don't, and we find out what's really, what are you made of at the end of the day? And that's what he's saying. I am wringing you out so I can find out what's at the core. And underneath those layers of apple, does it look good on the outside and the middle, it's rotten, or is it the real deal? Sitting there with my wife last night making lunches for our kids, we cut into an apple. It was beautiful on the outside, and on the inside, it has this rotten brown core. I've never seen it before. I'm like, ew, what is that? And the more we cut it, like around the sides, the worse it got. On the outside, it looked fine, but the core of that apple was nasty to the point where, like, our kids can't eat any of this, right? We threw it all away and got another one, right? That's what God's saying. I'm wringing you out to find out what is in the middle, okay? And not only that, but he humbled you and let you be what in verse 3? Let you hunger. God allowed you to experience what it was to be hungry. That's a rough feeling, knowing that hunger is not going to be satisfied by a steak dinner that night. Hey, just have a little manna now, but you're getting quail later. You got quail once and you get manna every day. He let you experience those things, okay? Keep reading in verse 3. It's one thing for God to tell you that. It's another thing for God to say, no, you're going to live it. You get to experience this. You get to understand that I'm your provider, and I'm putting you in a place where only I can provide for you. There is no more rope, okay? You have no other solution, okay? Notice, though, in verse 4, look at what happens to them.
Your clothing did not wear out on you, and your foot did not swell these 40 years.
How about that? You got one pair of Birkenstocks. Guess how long they lasted? 40 years. What? How did that happen? Did you get all funky feeted in those years? Did you have nasty blisters and couldn't walk? Nope. Even the little things. God, there's no athlete's foot. There's no whatever, right? God takes care of them, okay? Keep going, verse 5.
Know then in your heart that as a man disciplines his son, the Lord your God disciplines you. So you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God by walking in his ways and by fearing
him. Right. Just as a good father would say to his son, son, that's not going to work. And I'm going to discipline you because I love you. That's what God was doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Every good son that's loved by God is going to get disciplined. Yeah. They would have known, oh yeah, God's always done it that way, right? That's what he did to our forefathers in the wilderness. He allowed them to experience those things, not because he doesn't like them. He did that to humble them and to teach them, I'm God, and you're not. I love you, right? Because that's what, the worst parenting in the world is people that don't hate their kids, but are just like indifferent, right? And the kids just run amok and do whatever they want, right? You probably see those kids frequently in your life, and you know immediately which parents are involved and which parents are like just Audi 5 and doing whatever, and you know, just you're like, oh God, right? And you can't fix that in half an hour in a class or all day or whatever. It's just, so God does that because he loves us and he will not allow us to be spoiled brat kids that point to the name on the back of their jersey, okay? So that's the idea. In verse 11, part of the reason he did that is because of what's coming for them. Read that.
Take care lest you forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments and his rules and his statutes, which I command you today. Lest when you have eaten and are full and have built good houses and live in them, and when your herds and flocks multiply and your silver and gold is multiplied and all that you have is multiplied, then your heart will be lifted up and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery.
So what's coming for them? A lot. Blessing, right? If you can't handle adversity, then you're not going to be able to handle the blessing that I'm about to give you either, right? So I want you to remember that all of this is from me. He's going to remind them again in, where is it? He tells them, I forget where. He's like, man, you're going to walk into a land and you're going to have vineyards that you didn't plant, cisterns that you didn't dig, water that's there that you didn't provide for. Growth in abundance that's, is it nine? Yeah, it's coming again. Anyway, it's coming, and he's going to remind them, all of this stuff you didn't work for. It's going to be given to you, okay? And the tendency during success is to say what? I got money in my bank account, I can make my mortgage, my car payment's taken care of, there's clothes on my back, I got money to go spend, and I can go have a pizza. What do I need God for? I have everything I need. And he says, whoa, 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 whoa. We can't go there. You have to remember me, okay? So that's what he's teaching you, okay? And it's the same thing in our life, right? When we have stuff and all of our needs are taken care of, we have a very hard time remembering that God is going to be the source of all that, okay? So don't eat and be satisfied and forget God, okay? So great reminder on the purpose of trials. God allows us to go through those because he loves us, and he's teaching us great lessons in the midst of that, okay? Yeah, okay, so that's 8. Reminds them in verse 3 of chapter 9, okay, when they go into fight, okay, and all these, again, 7-on-1, he says, know therefore today, verse 3, it is the Lord your God who is crossing over before you as a consuming fire, right? That's a good visual when you're going into battle, that God as a consuming fire is going first, right? So I'm with you, I'm going in, okay? And then he tells them, in verse 4, do not say in your heart, when the Lord your God has driven them out of the land, all these pagan nations, because of my righteousness the Lord has brought me into this land to possess it. But it is because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord is dispossessing them before you. Okay, these people are nasty, and it isn't because you're so great, it's because they're so bad. I love you, and I picked you, but it's not that you're better than them. It's because I have chosen you, and they are exceedingly wicked. And verse 5 goes into that, okay? Because of the wickedness of these nations, I'm driving them out to fulfill my promise to them. Okay, so that's the idea. So that's what's going to take us into chapter 11 and following. Okay, so just as a reminder, that is what God has called them to do. He loves them, doesn't want them to forget who he is, reminds them of the central theme of Deuteronomy, love God, love your neighbor, don't forget me, and we're going to prosper if you can do that.
Plow it, but then you have all those big rocks. So there's always preparation routine before the season. And so, like, the sea could be representing, like, Israel. All this preparation.
Yeah, and they're going to get in the land where all that's been done for them. Someone's already worked the land. Someone's already planted. And they're going to walk in at harvest time and go, oh, these grapes are awesome. It just happens. They don't know the work that's involved, right? They haven't had to do any of that. So in the future, they will. But when they immediately come in, they come into bounty. They come into Egypt, basically, like how it was at the night. Everything's there, and it's a plentiful land, okay? So, yep. That was the best Super Bowl commercial. If you haven't seen it, you should. It's good. Okay. Look to verse 10. This is, or chapter 10, verse 12 and following. This is one of the coolest, just a good reminder. So almost Shema level stuff. Okay. Chapter 10, verse 12. We'll end there.
And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and to keep the commandments and statutes of the Lord, which I am commanding you today for your good.
Okay, that's it. That's what God wants from you, okay? What does God require? Love God, walk with him, give him everything you have, and obey me. Okay, that's it. I mean, that's the theme of victory for them. It's the theme of victory for life for us. Walk with God, love him, make him not first, but foremost amongst everything else. He's the only God on our mantle. That's who we obey, that's who we serve, okay? That's the idea. All right. So we will end there as that reminder. Okay. And then tomorrow we'll get into the rest of Deuteronomy, probably finish that up and begin our journey into Joshua and look at some battles. Okay. So cool. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. So the idea is in six, Moses is teaching this to the people. Okay. So six, verse one, this is the commandment, the statutes, and the judgments which the Lord your God has commanded me to teach you. So this is from God to Moses to, man, I want you to know this stuff, okay? So that's why it's such a big deal. I mean, God says, Moses, go teach this to the people, drill it in their heads, okay? So it's one of the few places where we get such a crystallized picture of who God is. He is God. He alone is God. He is one. That's God, okay? Love him with your entire being, okay? So again, when Jesus was asked, what's the greatest commandment? Well, it's like, well, dude, there's 634 of them. Like, what do I say? Well, at the end of the day, God's saying, love God with all of you. Like, your entire being, love him. Well, that can express itself out in don't intermarry, don't do these things, don't worship other gods, but it's the central theme of that is love him. And then Jesus added, obviously, and then love others, right? As you would love yourself. Love them. Love God, love others. That's the entire, basically, Old and New Testament together. So that's the importance of it, which is, again, why Andrew said, and we talked through it, why it is said so often, repeated so often, that is the chief commandment. It's the cliff notes of the entire Bible. So does that make sense? So, and again, everybody knows this. Everybody in Israel. It's really cool. For us to walk in and to be able to recite it, you talk about respect, it's a big deal for Jew to go, okay. They're saying it like Americans, that's okay. But they know it, right? You got Mike Spanglish over here that, you know, they'll figure it out, okay? But it's a big deal, okay? So, cool.
When do they say it over there?
I'd have to ask Ronan today, I don't know. But I think daily, probably in prayers with kids and
probably at least when they were about to go to bed.
School. I would assume. That's a great question for Ronan. Start writing those down. We have bus time with him and whatever, and it's a great time to go. Ronan, we asked this in residency. How many times a day do you guys say the Shema at home? Like, how does this with Itamar and your wife? Like, how do you? When do you say this? How do you? What does it look like? Those are great questions to ask. Okay. Ronan, by the way, is a as you kind of categorize Jews, he's a secular Jew, okay? Which means he's not going to have the garb on and the long beard and the ultra-Orthodox hat that you'll see, or maybe the vision that you have of like a rabbi in your head, okay? He's not one of those. He's not a guy that's going to go to synagogue necessarily all the time, okay? But he clearly loves God, follows God, teaches his kids things about God, okay? So and he's got a cool family history. that he'll kind of walk you through. So, but yeah, so that's kind of where he fits. So he's not a guy that is necessarily a real churchy guy, if that makes sense, in Israel. But the things of the word are very, very important to him. Okay, so you'll see that as we get there. Okay, so, but yeah, make a list of those questions because those are good to ask him. All right, cool. All right, France. We will see you in Dominicana. Have a good day.